For the sermon today, we will be hearing from our pastor, Mr. LeBlanc.
I was wrestling with what to talk about this week and looking at different subjects, and I finally decided to talk about this particular issue. The message today is entitled, The Great Temptation, The Great Temptation. I think all of us probably have a singular weakness, a lone area where we are more vulnerable to temptation in that area than in any other area. I always like to narrow it down to one because it forces you to isolate and really focus. And I was thinking about, well, what is the greatest temptation in my life? What is the potential stumbling block? What is the area where I am most vulnerable to Satan, the devil? Now, what had transcribed during this week is I was actually talking with somebody about a particular biblical figure, and he was wondering, well, the way God dealt with the man seemed to be rather harsh, and I'll be talking about that in just a moment. But the message today is the great temptation, the great temptation. What is your great temptation? Is your temptation toward unforgiveness? You know, Andrew Carlson just gave a great message during the feast of the need to forgive. Some people really wrestle with forgiveness. It just, the hurt, the anger, the inflammation of emotion because of a wrong done, that can be a great temptation, but it's a serious subject because even Jesus Christ says if we don't forgive, we could end up in the lake of fire. Now, I'm not going to go into that subject today. That was covered well at the feast. Some people are given over to sexual temptation. Some people can have itching ears. We'll talk a little bit about that today. Some people are given over to discouragement. It's good to isolate what is the great temptation for you because we know that Satan is a lion who is seeking to devour. You know, in sports, when two boxers fight, or even let's say on the football pitch or the soccer pitch, you'll see the premier players and they will find out the team's greatest weakness or a particular player's greatest weakness. That applies to American football. It's very real. And the problem with the great temptation is it can cause a lot of trouble in our lives. You will be attacked in that vulnerable area this year. We just all will, but that's going to be different for everybody. It's going to be different for everyone. There's this really interesting statement in Luke 4. Let's go to Luke chapter 4. Let's go to Luke chapter 4. Luke chapter 4. And Jesus Christ had finished his temptation. He had finished his temptation against Satan the devil. And the reason for talking about this today is because Satan will attack us, and then in a follow-up message, I will address, well, how do we fight Satan? Because I think how we fight Satan is more important than what the temptations may be, because we all need to fight. We have to fight our human weaknesses, but that really isn't the focus today. I'm just trying to encourage you to hone in on your greatest temptation. What is the great weakness? And Jesus Christ goes to battle against Satan in the book of Luke chapter 4. And at the very end, Jesus finishes with Satan in verse 12. He says, Jesus answered and said to him, to Satan, it has been said, you shall not tempt the Lord your God. And with that, when Satan had finished all of his temptations, and there were three main temptations, he tried to get Jesus Christ to cave, to sin. We're told that he, Satan, departed from Christ until an opportune time. This is a chilling statement. That Satan was going to attack Jesus again, but he was going to wait for that opportune time. Regarding you and me, he's going to find that opportune time. I don't know if it's next week. I don't know if it's next year, but he will find a way to to isolate you in a sense and work against you and to find that opportune time. I was thinking about King David and this horrific decision, which I even think you and I have a trouble understanding. And I've mentioned this time and again, how David was greatly blessed by God. He never failed to win a battle. He was made king. But then he fell to the temptation of pride to number Israel. And David, though we tend to think of him giving in to sexual temptation, which he did, the greater weakness that caused the most damage was his temptation to cave into vanity and pride and to number Israel. And he suffered terribly. I always deeply respected Mr. Herbert Armstrong, because Herbert Armstrong, and he makes this clear in the autobiography, that his greatest weakness, his greatest temptation was the temptation to want to be seen as successful in the eyes of others. He wanted to be seen by the world as this high achiever. And he was a high. And the drive and the energy was not wrong, but the vanity was an issue. And he goes in depth in describing how for the first 28 years of his ministry, he had to live, as he says, in poverty. And he really struggled because God was driving that vanity, that pride, it's a pride issue, out of him. It's not wrong to be successful. It's not wrong to achieve. But there was, he was given over to that, and he had to deal with that. Now, some of you don't have to deal with that. Some of us will never deal with vanity. We're different. Herbert Armstrong was an overly confident man. And sometimes he had to be dealt with, where the vanity crept up upon him. And for 28 years, he had to deal with that. You may not have to deal with vanity. We're all different. Some people have to deal with their tongues. The nation of Israel, if it had a personality profile, its great weakness was complaining. They constantly were complaining. The complaining was so much a pattern of behavior that eventually God said, I've had enough. You won't enter into the promised land. I've had it with you. And they died in the wilderness. Complaining can be the major weakness of an individual. I don't know you well enough to know if that's your problem, but these are serious issues. And Satan will get us to complain and complain and complain that we can turn bitter or resentful. Circumstances complain against people, but it can actually lead somebody out of the kingdom of God. It was amazing that Jesus Christ talked about his own hometown. So you take a look at Nazareth as a city, but it can apply to an individual at Nazareth. We're told that, they were filled with unbelief. They were people who didn't believe, and their doubt was almost hostile. And they just couldn't believe somebody from their own city, their own community, and they knew him as a boy, that he could be this person whom God could use in this great way. It was an unbelief. There are different types of unbelief. There's unbelief because you're just struggling. You remember the man who said to Christ, I believe, but help my unbelief. That wasn't a hostile unbelief. But the town of Nazareth was, there was almost an edge and anger in their unbelief. There was almost a sarcasm. What can this Jesus do? We knew him. We knew his family. And very few people were healed in that town. But sometimes church members can cave to that. Reuben caved to his sensuality. He was as unstable as water. You get into the original language, unstable there does not mean emotionally unpredictable. It's actually worse. It means somebody who just gives into his sexual passions. His sexual passion raged like a river, and he didn't control it. And he went up into getting involved with his father's concubine, a type of wife. And because of it, he lost out on the blessing of the firstborn. So you see all these problems with people. It's very easy to go in the Bible and see all their weaknesses. But what is my weakness? Where will I be tempted? So there's this opportune time. An even more chilling statement is found in Luke 22, verses 31 through 34, where Christ said to Peter, "Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift you as wheat." Everyone here, Satan desires to sift you. Now, maybe it's not Satan himself, because Satan can't be at everywhere at once. We've never taught that Satan can be everywhere at once. But we talk about Satan. We talk about his world, his values, his culture. The demonic world, and these demons are in the tens of thousands, can be in different places. We can be tempted. How will Satan choose to sift you as wheat? Unforgiveness, sexual temptation, vanity. Like Demas, you love the world, lust for money. It can be any number of things. So for me, I need to identify, where will Satan choose to sift me? Maybe it's discouragement. You know, discouragement is a very powerful weapon of Satan. I think it's his most powerful weapon, because when people are discouraged, they become paralyzed. They don't produce fruit. They stop praying. They withdraw. It's a very potent weapon. We'll talk about that next time when I talk about fighting Satan, as we all have to fight. And I want to talk about how we fight better. Let's lay the groundwork today. What is your greatest temptation? I hope you give this some thought. Some are tempted to laziness. Remember in Matthew chapter 25, there's the wicked and lazy servant. Some people are lazy in prayer, lazy in Bible study, and over a period of months and years, that can create a lot of problems. In a way, your weakness is truly none of my business, right? It really isn't. We are to work out our salvation with fear and with trembling. But the good news is we can identify the weakness with God's help, and we are well able to overcome. Like Mr. Carlson was saying, you know, we can go about doing what we need to do in this area and do it with joy. But we do not need to be bullied by our weaknesses. The power of God is so great. If we yield to him, if we stay close to him, we do not need to fall. Okay, so who was I talking with this individual about? Well, it had to do with Moses. Now, Moses was an incredibly wonderful individual. He was one of the few individuals in all of the Bible. And I have to wonder, perhaps the one, and maybe there's another, and I've just missed it. I don't know if there was any other individual who spoke to God while he was in the human flesh, face to face, as often as Moses did. Remember, the pillar of fire would follow and the cloud would follow, and Moses would go into the tabernacle, and then Moses was up on Mount Sinai. And at one point, Moses said, because that's so normal of an intimate relationship, he says to God, "May I see you?" And Christ said, "Yes. But you can only see the back side of me briefly." But he was up on that mountain all during that time. The Ten Commandments were given to Moses. Was there another individual in the flesh? Now, Christ prayed to the Father. I understand that. But in terms of a man who literally face to face spent as much time with God as that man did. Now, he was particularly humble. So let's go to see the character of this man, Numbers chapter 12. Numbers chapter 12. Numbers 12. So as we go through this, what is your great weakness? Maybe you know it. Maybe you need to think about it. I'm thinking about it this week. And I'm not afraid of it, because I know God will strengthen me. Now, I can identify two or three weaknesses pretty quickly. It's isolating the one that is the greater. But I don't need to be depressed about this. God will give us the strength. As a matter of fact, this is good news, because the stronger I am in this department, the quicker Satan will flee. You know, we're told in 1 Peter 5, we're also told in the book of James chapter 4, resist Satan and he will flee from you. It's too bad the King James English, King James is still a great translation, but resist is not strong enough. It is better to say stand against him. It means more, you kind of got a bully and you plant your feet and you stand. Or it's like that man in Israel, when the Philistines were attacking his field, took a stand, took his sword in his hand, and fought and destroyed all those Philistines in the field and protected his patch of the lentils, where you have an attitude, you stand, you pull the sword, you say, we fight right here, we fight right now, and God will give me the victory. So that's kind of the attitude of mine, because that's the more important lesson, which we will discuss next time. Because God will equip us to fight, and we can have a confidence. We need not be timid in this. Let's get back to Numbers chapter 12. A beautiful statement. And in verse 1, Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married, for he had married an Ethiopian woman. Obviously, she was not an Israelite woman, and they were attacking him. Aren't friends and family, your best friends and your family, the most wonderful people in the world? Give them time and they're going to go after you. I'm being a little sarcastic here. But human beings, here are the people you would think who would be supportive of him. Okay, Miriam and Aaron. Miriam was older. Aaron was older. They have to go after their brother. Now, I don't know how public this criticism was. It's almost funny, but it wasn't funny then. And in verse 2, so they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also? So they were saying, Moses takes upon himself too much. We too are leaders in Israel. Well, they were. But there was a vanity. I think Miriam was a vain woman, a very capable woman, and God did use her. But she went too far, and she wanted the spotlight. It was a vanity issue. It was a pride issue. She wanted the spotlight here. And Aaron was a problem too, but she was a greater problem. And so God had to deal with her. So when the Lord heard of it, he was very angry. And in verse 3, now the man Moses was very humble, more than all the men who were on the face of the earth. Remember, Moses didn't want the spotlight. He didn't want to lead these people. He was an incredible man, very talented and faithful. He didn't care about titles. You almost get a sense that Moses moved through the camp and he would rather not be known. You know, it's be like a celebrity culture we live in, like the person walks through the airport, just wishes nobody would recognize him or her. It really doesn't matter. He had no interest in the worship of human beings. It's not wrong to be honored, but we should not put our hearts into desiring to be honored in a sense, in a public sense like that. Now, suddenly the Lord said to Moses, Aaron and Miriam, come out, the three of you, to the tabernacle of the meeting. So the three came out. This was not a good day for Miriam and Aaron. And the Lord came down in the pillar of the cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle. So the cloud is there. Boy, I would have loved to have seen that cloud, you know, a grayish white. I think it had energy. You know, you can see these cloud formations and there's movement and big storms, something like that. must have been absolutely spectacular and terrifying. So Miriam, probably dealing with her great weakness here, was her vanity. Look at me. Look at me. I'm important. I'm important. And the Lord came down in the pillar. And he called Aaron and Miriam out. And they both went forward. And this is what Christ, remember, we're dealing with Christ, the God of the of that time in the history of Israel. And he said, hear now my words. Is there a prophet among you? Is there a prophet among you? I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision, or I speak to him in a dream. Now God will work with men, and he works with people in visions and in dreams. You'll find that sometimes in the New Testament too, with the Apostle Paul or Philip or others. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all of my house. In other words, God's saying, look, I trust this man totally. I speak with him face to face, even plainly, and not in dark sayings. You get a sense that Christ, and my license here, that Christ enjoyed being around Moses, that he could be around Moses because Moses was humble. And we don't know how many days they spoke together. You could put different pieces of the puzzle together, but he spent a lot of time with Christ. Now that cloud was there, the fire was there, the smoke, so he didn't always see him quite totally. We know he never saw his face, but I speak with him face to face. Okay. He says, and he sees the form of the Lord. You haven't seen the form of the Lord. Moses has. I love him. And he's special to me. And you criticized him. Bad day. Bad day for you. And what led to it? Pride, vanity. I've got to be in the spotlight. They were in the spotlight enough. With some people, it's never enough. Okay, so this is the story. Okay, why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? So the anger of the Lord was aroused against them. And then he departed. And when the cloud departed from above the tabernacle, suddenly Miriam became leprous, as white as snow. And Aaron turned toward Miriam, and there she was, a leper. Leprosy is hideous. And I've seen it. And you're scared of it. I always remember when I lived in Nairobi, Kenya, I used to often walk about, maybe a little less than a mile to work. I lived right in the city. I lived in a nice apartment complex, and that way I'd walk into the office. Now, on one of the streets, there was this leper, and he'd sit down, and leprosy had destroyed his feet, his toes, most of his fingers, okay? And his face was very patchy, and you'd often walk by him, and he was begging there. Somebody had to leave him in the morning begging, but boy, you would never want to touch. It was just too scary. It was heartbreaking to see this. Well, she was as white as snow. She hadn't lost, because in a true leprosy, you lose feeling like in your fingers and toes. And so you wear it down and kind of dies and you don't even know it's happening. It is a horrible, horrible disease. And of course, people don't want to be around you. You're isolated. You end up living with other lepers. I mean, it is just a horrible thing. She wasn't at that stage yet, but she was as white as can be. Had to terrify them. In verse 11, so Aaron said to Moses, oh, my Lord, please do not lay this sin, the sin of vanity, don't lay it upon us, which we've done very foolishly and in which we have sinned. Please do not let her be as one dead, verse 12, whose flesh is half consumed when he comes out of his mother's womb. So Moses cries out to the Lord. You can even see his humility here. He doesn't attack his brother and sister. And he cries out to the Lord, "Please heal her, O God, I pray." Then the Lord said to Moses, "If her father had but spit in her face," which is a great rebuke, a great humiliation to literally spit in her face, "would she not be shamed 7 days? Let her be shut out of the camp 7 days, and afterward she may be received." Again, so Miriam was shut out of the camp for 7 days, and the people did not journey till Miriam was brought in again. And afterward, the people moved from Hazeroth and camped in the wilderness of Paran. So she had to stay outside in that camp. When did the leprosy leave her? Obviously, it had left her by the time she came back into the camp, but he was hot. You know, Christ is very merciful, but he can get hot. And there was a spirit of pride here. He had to deal with it. And there was a spirit of pride in David when he numbered Israel. And I always thought it was particularly perceptive that Mr. Armstrong realized that the sin of numbering Israel was actually a greater sin than the sin that was committed with Bathsheba. Pride is very destructive. It's hard for us to understand that because we live in a world athletes are always dancing around after they score or win, or we're a very prideful people. But it opens the door to so many other sins. So David is the most humble man in all of the earth, but he had a weakness. Let's get a sense of it. And you probably know what it is, but let's just review. And it is interesting to see this. Let's go to Exodus chapter 2. I don't know if this is your premier weakness. Now, this has hit me at times, but I don't think it's always there. From time to time, I think some of us struggle with it. But with him, it was particularly explosive. He did at times have an explosive temper. He was somebody who could just rage. If you've ever had a boss who does this, or a neighbor, or a brother, or a sister, or a husband, or a wife, I've known women who raged as well. It is hard to live with that because you're walking on eggshells and you never know when they're going to explode. Let's go to Exodus chapter 2. Now, I don't think he was always enraged. I don't believe that. You don't get a sense of that, but from time to time, he would just let loose. You go to Exodus chapter 2. Now, this is interesting because he knows he's an Israelite and he sees an Egyptian mistreating an Israelite, a Hebrew, and he gets very angry with the Egyptian, and he kills the Egyptian. Now, apparently, we know from Josephus, Moses was a successful general. He was probably a very strong man, very capable of fighting man, who could fight, okay? In verse 11, now it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown, verse 11, chapter 2, that he went out to his brethren, and he looked at their burdens, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. I'm sure you've seen the movie, The Ten Commandments, and I thought they did a pretty good job of showing Charlton Heston seeing, you know, a Hebrew being beaten, and then he kills him. And of course, it's in a different context, but it creates a good image. Yes, it is true. It may shock you, but Moses did look like Charlton Heston. Charlton Heston looked like Moses. That's the way it is. Get used to it, okay? There's only one person who can play Moses in a movie, and that's Charlton Heston. He was so good in that, I thought. So he kills this man. So he looked this way and that way, and when he saw no one, he killed the Egyptian, hit him in the sand. A flash of anger here. Now, that was very dangerous to do that because you don't kill Egyptians. More to that story. But you can see where the anger just I'm going to kill this guy. Not the, you know, maybe the Egyptian deserved it. I mean, we could say that as well, but you just see the anger flare here. Let's go to Exodus chapter 32. Now, this is interesting, and maybe you never thought about this before, and I passed over this over the years, but you can see the anger flare again. Now, he's up in the mountain with God. Chapter 32. In verse 1, Exodus 32 and verse 1, now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, come, make us gods. Come, make us gods that they shall go before us. Because Moses, they thought, had just died up in that mountain. He was gone so long. And Aaron said to them, break off the golden earrings. And so Aaron yielded to the people. So Aaron was weak in this. Now, Aaron was a very talented man. God used him in a great way. He had a good voice, could speak, probably a very good public speaker, literally. But he was weak in these areas. And of course, the people began to play and corrupt themselves. And God sees what is going on. In verse 9, and the Lord said to Moses, I've seen the people, and indeed, it is a stiff-necked people. Now, therefore, let me alone, that my wrath may burn hot, verse 10, against them, because they have now given themselves over to this orgy of behavior. I'm going to consume them, and I will make of you a great nation. And again, in verse 11, you see the humility of Moses. And Moses pleaded with the Lord. Lord, why does your wrath burn hot against your people, whom you have brought out of the land of Egypt by your great power and your mighty hand? Why should the Egyptians speak and say, he brought them out of harm's way, out of Egypt, but then he chose to kill them in the mountains and to consume them? And he tells God face to face here, in a sense, turn from your fierce wrath and relent from the harm that you're going to do to your people. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. So again, you just see the humility of this man. These people were difficult. They constantly were complaining. They were always criticizing him. But Moses said, don't destroy him. Don't destroy these people. So the Lord relented from the harm which he said he would do to his people. Then Moses turned and went down from the mountain. And he took the two tablets of the testimony, and the tablets were written on both sides. Incredible. Now, the tablets were the work of God, and the writing was the writing of God engraved on the tablets. So God actually wrote on those tablets. Now, Joshua was waiting for Moses, and Joshua wasn't in the camp. He was actually waiting with him all this time, you know, below. So he wasn't part of the manifestation when Christ was speaking with Moses. And Joshua said, there's a noise of war in the camp. And he said, it is not the noise of the shout of victory, nor the noise of the cry of the defeat, but the sound of singing. So it was as soon as he came near the camp, Moses saw the calf and the dancing. Okay, now here's Moses again. He's enraged, and you could say that's true. He has a right to be enraged, and he would be right. In verse 19, so Moses, when he saw their dancing and the celebration in dancing to the foreign gods, Moses' anger became hot, and he cast the tablets out of his hands and broke them at the foot of the mountain. He was right in being angry. But should he have tossed those Ten Commandments? I don't think so. I mean, God engraved his own hand upon those stones. Those are special. But in a rage, he just threw them. But you can see the temper, right? This flare of temper. He could have set them aside, but he didn't. Now, I can't prove, I can't tell you that God was angry with him for doing that, but it just didn't seem to make sense. But it was part of this flare of temper where he actually throws the commandments and the stones. But whether God judged him for that is difficult to know. It doesn't say that he is judged for that, but it just, you see his temper. But then you have the big flare of temper that cost Moses the opportunity to actually walk over and lead the children of Israel into the promised land. Numbers 20. When you're in a leadership position, you have to really watch your temper. There's a time to have a temper, but you can really hurt people with your temper. And you can take the spotlight away from God and place it on yourself. And here Moses has a bit of a tantrum, and God says, that's it, you're not going over. Now, it can seem to us that, boy, that's quite harsh, because Moses was such a good man, and he was a good man. Let's take a look at what happens here. The children of the congregation of Israel were complaining again, griping yet again. And in verse 3, Numbers 20, and the people contended with Moses and spoke, saying, if only we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. God just led them, protected them. Now they're complaining again. It's just horrible. They were constantly complaining. And in verse 5, they said, and why have you made us to come out of Egypt to bring us into this evil place? So, a complaining spirit is something God does not like. Now, we all have a little bit in us because we're Americans, right? It's just our culture has really become complaining oriented. And everybody's a victim, and everybody's wrong, and I'm wrong, and you're wrong. And, you know, Mount Rushmore, why don't you have a woman carved there on Mount Rushmore? And why don't you have somebody of color carved up there on Mount Rushmore? I mean, everything we do is wrong constantly. But that spirit has entered us. And it is strange how we have become more of a blessed people. We become complaining, more complaining, complaining, complaining. We want our lattes when we order them at the coffee shop to be absolutely heated perfectly and have two espresso shots, not just one. And we want the foam, right? But we only want a little bit of foam on top. We don't want too much foam. Oh, good night. And we go through the line again, and this wasn't done right. We're a whiny people, and that is not God's spirit. So when you start to complain, know this, that is not God's spirit. It is not God's spirit. It could be something else, but it's not God's spirit. And so they're complaining against God, and Moses has had enough. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, take the rod, you and your brother Aaron, gather the congregation together, speak to the rock. Now, when God tells you to do something, you better do it exactly like he says. This isn't, what do I think? God doesn't say, well, do this, and then we say, then we have 20 minutes of, well, this is what I think, or this is how I think it should be done. We're dealing with God. And Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he was commanded. And verse 10, and Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock and said to them, okay, he's hot. He's hot. I can understand it. When you're with, if you've ever been with somebody all day, maybe you spend the day with them and they're complaining half the day. Oh, may they trip and fall and break their ankle or other such things. It wears people down. And in verse 10, and Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock and said to them, hear now, you rebels. Well, God didn't tell him to say that. They were rebels. And then Moses goes too far. Must we bring water for you out of this rock? Now, God was bringing the water out, not Moses, okay? But this is why anger, and God's not against anger. There's a time to raise your voice. There's a time to yell. So he's just to speak to the rock. The emphasis is on this incredible miracle of God taking a rock and then water coming from this rock. And, you know, Moses just had a tantrum in a sense. He just exploded. And Moses lifted up his hands, struck the rock twice with his rod. He wasn't to do that. Now, there's another message here about Jesus Christ and so on, but I won't go into that today. A very important message, but he doesn't handle it the way he should. So instead of a wonderful miracle, it's just he's enraged, okay? And Moses lifted up his hand, struck the rock twice with his rod. And the water did come out because God was taking care of the people. And the animals drank as well. And then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron. Ooh, big mistake. Ooh. But this is hard for us to understand, isn't it? Because he was such a good man. And you have to think, well, was it that bad? Well, yes, because God is not honored in this great miracle. And to whom much is given, much is expected. To whom much is given, much is expected. And Moses, you're not to have this outburst of rage, especially when it involves me performing a miracle, and I should be hallowed in the eyes of the children of Israel. Verse 12, and the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, because you did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, because you did not treat this event with the highest respect and with great fear, and because you gave in to your temper, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them. Maybe we're a little bit too patient, a little bit too embracing or tolerant of our tempers than we should be. Judgment is on the church of God, and soon we will all actually stand before the judgment seat of Christ. If you go to Deuteronomy chapter 1, there is a time for anger. We know that. But most of us have some battle with it. But I don't know if that's your great temptation. I don't live with you. I don't work with you. Deuteronomy chapter 1. We're told that Caleb goes into the promised land, verse 36, because he was faithful to God and God loved Caleb. Joshua goes into the promised land, but Moses is not allowed to go in. And Moses tells us here in verse 37 of chapter 1, the Lord was also angry with me for your sakes, because God was teaching the nation that even with the leader he loved, who was the most humble man in all of the earth, that God said, you cross the line here and you will not go into the promised land. Now, he'll be in the kingdom of God, and Moses is a wonderful example in many ways, and he will be in the kingdom and he will have great responsibility. But it should put the fear of God in us. If you have a temper problem, it is not a little thing. If you have a gossip problem, it is not a little thing. If you're given over to sensuality like Reuben was and approached his father's concubine and had a sexual relationship with her, it is not a little thing. Okay? Sometimes we're so used to sin and the world around us, it's everywhere, and we know God is patient. And he is, we can underestimate that the anger of God is also present. So the Lord was angry with me, verse 37, for your sakes, even you shall not go into the promised land. Now he was allowed to go up onto the mountain and he was able to look over the land. And God loved this man. So if you were to be placed in the Bible, you know, we used to say the book of Acts never fully ended, and maybe some of your good behavior or maybe some of your bad behavior is placed in the book of Acts. Let us just indulge ourselves just for a moment. Let us say you have a weakness and God loves you, but he describes an episode, a behavior, a bad week or a bad day, and you're in the book of Acts. What would it be? Why would you be there? Temper? Lust? Mistreatment of a spouse? Vanity? A loose tongue? Would you be like Demas, who left the Apostle Paul and went into the world? Frightening. I don't want to be in the Bible. I don't want my weakness to be showcased there. Now, God's very patient, and God loves us. And I don't think this is going to happen with any of us. But remember, Satan is going to look for an opportune time. He is a lion seeking whom he may devour. I was reading 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 3, and it talks about certain people who have itching ears. That there's some people, and I've known people in the church, good people, but they have a temptation to want to hear some new doctrine or some new prophecy. And for whatever reason, their personalities, they're just drawn to this stuff. And it's always, well, did you ever think about this? Or did you ever see that? Or do you know, did you hear this guy's sermon? You know, maybe the Azazel goat isn't what we really thought it was. And this, for some people, this is handy. And they can't get enough of this stuff. But they're good people. They love the poor. They're faithful to church doctrines, but they just have a personality and they can't get enough of that. Martha, Martha, you're anxious and worried about many things. It's a little sin. She's described in Luke chapter 10 and verse 42. But if she doesn't get a control of that, it can lead to stress and other problems. Peter was impulsive, but he had a lot of good qualities. But you see Peter being impulsive here and being impulsive there. So we see his weakness, right? Doubting Thomas. He had a weakness. He doubted, right? I mean, it's right there. There was a label. I pray to God my weaknesses are not displayed in the scripture. I will tell you, I have them. They're not particularly that exciting, and I will never make it on the cover of the Inquirer magazine. And neither will you, right? But we do have our weaknesses. Spend some time over the next week or two. You don't need to beat yourself up. Definitely, I am not about that today. But Satan will look for that opportune time. Is it impulsiveness? Is it a flare of temper? Is it the spirit of unforgiveness, which is a particularly dangerous spirit? You know, if you want God not to answer your prayers, start not forgiving somebody in your life. If you want an immediate roadblock to not having your prayers answered, start to grow bitter towards someone and not forgive them. It's one of the worst things you can do. And I look at you and I think you're forgiving people. I'm not saying that's your issue. Be careful of pride. Maybe you're given to that, but many of you, you don't strike me really as prideful people. All these different weaknesses, and we'll get into it later in the next message, I mostly want to focus on how to fight the beast. How do you fight the beast of laziness or the beast of discouragement or depression? They are beasts, or the beast of unforgiveness or impulsiveness or vanity. Because God gives us tools to fight, but we never overcome. You know, Albert was talking about changing at the feast. We have to change, but we need the tools and the power of God. And we will be victorious with the help of God. So this is not a discouraging message. But give it some thought over the next week or two. If we were really close, and maybe you had just one glass of wine, and you were a little bit relaxed, and you know, I was to say, Willie, what's your great weakness? And you were to tell me, and I was to write it down. I wouldn't write it down. Or I said to Albert, what is your great weakness? But then Albert says, okay, I've told you mine. What is yours? And we would have that conversation. You know, I have some benefits as being single. You see, I don't have a wife kind of hitting me over the head with my great weakness. I kind of hide it. When you're married, I imagine your spouse kind of knows possibly what it is. But God wants to give us a victory, and he will, and we will defeat him. And if we resist the devil and fight against him and stand and fight against him with the help of Christ, there is no weakness that will defeat us. There is no weakness that, with time and closeness and prayer and study, there is no weakness with the help of God that cannot be overcome.